This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. We've got another hour of old-time radio for you this week, beginning with a series we haven't heard from before. It's titled Tales of Fatima. This episode aired May 28th, 1949. It's titled Time to Kill. Then we move on to Believe It or Not with Act of Faith. We'll finish off with Voyage of the Scarlet Queen with an episode titled Grafter's Fort and the Black Pearl of Galala Bay. This episode aired October 23rd, 1947. But first, here's Tales of Fatima.
Hello there, this is Basil Rathbone. I'm so glad you can be with Fatima and me tonight. She helps me solve a surprising mystery that had in it several sounds of music. And several sounds of murder.
The Tales of Fatima, a new series of exciting mystery stories starring that distinguished actor, Mr. Basil Rathbone.
Before we begin tonight's tale, I've got something to suggest. If you smoke a long cigarette, smoke the new Long Fatima. You see, the name Fatima has stood for the best in cigarette quality for 30 years. And now the new Fatima is the best of long cigarettes. Ladies and gentlemen, if you smoke a long cigarette, smoke the best of long cigarettes. Smoke Fatima. Our author for tonight, Gail Ingram, has written a startling tale, especially for me. I didn't know the solution until I recalled the words of Fatima. Now, if you listen well to those words, you may solve the mystery before I do.
Time is the essence. A fact misplaced in time conceals the truth.
Those words are the key to tonight's tale of Fatima, and here it is, Time to Kill.
The Saturday night performance is over, and Basil Rathbone is leaving the theater accompanied by Oliver, his chauffeur.
Got my bags, Oliver?
Yes, Mr. Rathbone, I got your bags.
And did you tell the stage manager I'd be in Westchester over the weekend?
Yes, boss.
Well, after the weekend, Mr. Rathbone.
Oh, that's right, Bert. See you Monday.
Oh, don't rush. Stay for a month, if you like.
The show'd close in 3 days.
Oliver.
Well, it would. But people come to see as Basil Rathbone, not as understudy.
Oliver. Bert Randall here is a very fine actor indeed.
Well, I like you better.
Frankly, Oliver, so do I. Cheerio, Mr. Rathbone.
Cheerio, dear boy. Oh, beautiful night for a drive to Westchester.
Hey, somebody's shooting.
And they're shooting at me. That one came close. Quick, Oliver, into the car. Well, it seems we've made our getaway, Oliver. Now I want to phone Lieutenant Farrell and report this outrage.
Basil.
Oliver, is your voice changing?
It's me, Basil, darling.
It was. There's a dame in the back seat.
Why don't you get in the back seat too, Basil, honey?
That's an enchanting invitation, I'm sure, but I make it a practice never to get into back seats with strange ladies.
But I'm Bunny.
Bunny?
Oh, now, Basil, sweetie, please stop teasing. After those thrilling letters you've been sending to me all spring.
Now, just a moment. Letters? I've been sending you?
Of course. To Chattanooga.
My dear young lady,
I... Bunny. The name is Bunny. You can't do this to me, Basil. I've run away from home on account of those letters you wrote me. I've left my husband.
Good heavens. Oliver, stop the car. Now, look here, madam. I never saw you before. I never wrote you. It's all a fantastic mistake. I suppose you just hop out of the car and run along back to your husband. There's a good girl.
All right, Basil. All right, sir, but you got no call to treat me like this. You got no call at all, and I won't let you get away with it. I'm warning you. You'll be sorry. You'll be sorry.
So that's why I phoned you, Farrell. Been quite an eventful evening. First I got shot at, and then I got involved with a strange blonde.
Look, Rathbone, the blonde is your problem.
Oh, thanks awfully.
I'm only interested in the shooting.
Well, the gunman's a very poor shot, thank goodness. Fired 5 bullets and they all missed me.
Well, that's pretty bad marksmanship. Have you any idea who might have done it?
Of course not. Why should someone want to kill me?
Maybe they saw your show. Look, I'll investigate this thing. Meanwhile, are you still going away for the weekend?
Well, I don't know now.
You go ahead. Start shooting at you. I always say there's no better time to get out of town.
You may have a point there. All right, Farrell, I'm on my way. If you want me, I'll be up in Westchester at the Wayside.
The what?
The Wayside. It's a small hotel.
Say, boss, this is a real nice hotel you made reservations for at. Hey, you want I should register?
No, thanks, Oliver. I'll do it myself.
Can I help you, sir?
Yes, please. My name is Basil Rathbone. I have a reservation.
Oh, Mr. Rathbone, of course. Would you mind stepping into that telephone booth over there?
Well, I did have a larger suite in mind.
There's a long-distance call for you. New York. I'll have them switch it right over.
Oh, yes, thank you. Hello?
Mr. Rathbone?
Yes?
Mr. Rathbone, you've got to come back to New York right away. You're the only person who could help me.
I am?
Yes. I'm at the Grace Hotel, room 714. Hurry, please, while there's still time.
Time for what?
To save me. I've been threatened, Mr. Rathbone. I'm going to be killed, and I... Oh, no.
No, what?
He's here, Mr. Rathbone. No, please.
Hello. Hello, what's happening there?
It's already...
Hello. 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 New York Police Headquarters. Quick, send an officer to Grace Hotel, room 714. Someone has just been murdered. Come on, Oliver. We're going back to New York right away. Dial the car radio, will you, Oliver? There might be some news of the murder by now.
Oh, sure. It's a terrible thing, that murder. A terrible thing. Music. You want I should look for a news broadcast?
No, leave the music, Oliver. It's good to hear. Makes you forget bloodshed and murder.
Hey, what happened?
Ladies and gentlemen, an important announcement.
What's this, Oliver?
Basil Rathbone, noted stage, motion picture, and radio star, has just been discovered brutally murdered. We continue now with our regular program.
I just can't believe it, Sergeant. Rathbone dead.
Yep, head bashed in with an iron plate.
I'm glad they took the body away before I saw it. Tell me, was he badly mangled?
Face smashed beyond recognition.
But beyond recognition? Well, then how do you know it was Rathbone?
Well, like I told you, Lieutenant, the hotel room was registered in his name. I found letters in the dead guy's pocket addressed to Basil Rathbone.
Oh, I just can't believe it. Rathbone gone. Somehow I... kind of expect him to walk in and say, "Hello, Farrell, needs some help."
Hello, Farrell, needs some help.
Rathbone, what are you doing here?
I'm curious about my murder. Where am I stretched out? In the next room?
No, they took you to the morgue. I mean, well, I didn't think you were killed. Did you rent this room?
Of course not.
Well, it's registered in your name. The dead guy was evidently pretending to be Basil Rathbone.
But why?
Wait a minute, hold it. Yes?
Who is this?
Farrell, homicide. Who's this?
My name is Mrs. Lionel Kroll, and I... Oh, Did you say homicide?
That's right.
Then you've got to believe me. My husband didn't kill Mr. Rathbone.
He didn't?
No, please, you've got to believe me. My husband hardly knew Mr. Rathbone. He couldn't possibly have killed him. Please remember that. Goodbye.
What was that all about?
The woman says her husband didn't kill you.
Oh, how interesting. Why don't we ask her husband? His opinion.
Good idea. She said she was Mrs. Lionel Crawl. I'll have Crawl picked up right away.
Oh, Lieutenant Farrell, a call just came through from headquarters.
Well, hold that a minute, Sergeant. I want to send out a general alarm for a man by the name of Lionel Crawl.
Well, I don't think that'll be necessary, sir.
Oh, and just why don't you think that'll be necessary, sir?
Because they've just identified the dead man. His name is Lionel Crawl.
Mrs. Crowell's apartment must be at the top of this flight, Darrell.
Yeah. You know, this is really the kind of a job I hate, Rathbone. Telling a woman her husband's been murdered.
I know. By the way, have you sent out a denial of my death yet? After all, someone might just care.
Well, now, relax, relax. The early morning papers probably have the right story by now.
Good. Well, ring the bell.
Sure, but I don't... Now, look, this is more up your alley. You tell Mrs. Crowell.
Yes?
Go ahead, Rathbone.
Rathbone? Did you say Rathbone?
Yes, I'm Basil Rathbone, Mrs. Crowell.
You killed him.
What?
You killed my husband.
Now, wait a minute, my dear lady.
They just called me and told me it's my husband that's dead. And you killed him.
Oh, now, look here. Why, I didn't even know your husband.
How can you stand there and say you didn't know Lionel Crowell?
Because I didn't know the... Oh, was... Was he the Lionel Crawl who ran a correspondence course in dramatic art?
Of course.
Dramatic art? Hey, Rathbone, those letters addressed to you, the ones in Crawl's pocket, they were about a dramatic course.
I remember now that a Lionel Crawl once came to ask me to endorse a course in dramatic art he was preparing, and I refused. That's the only time I ever met him.
But... The only time? You had a date with him tonight.
Tonight?
You called my husband and told him to meet you at the Grace Hotel tonight. You said he...
What's the matter?
Look. Behind you. It's a hand.
A hand?
Yes. Poking over the banister of the stairs.
Rathbone, duck. The hand's pointing a gun at you. Get down!
Hey, Misby. It's that bad marksman practicing again.
You stay here, Rathbone. I'm going after that guy.
Mr. Rathbone, what is it? What's happening?
I'm not sure, Mrs. Crowell. In fact, I'm only sure of one thing.
What?
I hope somebody catches that gunman before practice makes perfect.
We'll be back in just a moment with the second act of tonight's Tale of Fatima.
Remember, ladies and gentlemen, Fatima is the long cigarette that's long on quality. You see, Fatima has all the advantages of a long cigarette. A cleaner, cooler, milder smoke. And in addition, Fatima has an advantage all its own. A really superb flavor. A different, better flavor, because Fatima is a blend of more expensive tobaccos. So if you smoke a long cigarette, smoke the best of long cigarettes. Smoke Fatima. Remember, Fatima is the long cigarette that's long on quality.
Now back to tonight's tale of Fatima, Time to Kill, starring Mr. Basil Rathbone.
Farrell! Farrell!
Rathbone, what are you doing out here in the street?
I'm trying to find the gentleman who took those pot shots at me.
Well, don't. You just stay out of sight. Finding that guy is my business.
Well, how's business?
Rotten.
If I could just figure out why someone is trying to kill me.
And while you're at it, figure out why Crowell was pretending to be you.
Maybe the answer to that lies in a closer investigation of Mr. Crowell's affairs.
How do you mean?
Well, that correspondence course in dramatics he was connected with. I'd like to look into that.
Well, I suppose we could check his office.
Then suppose we do.
Here's the office, Rathbone. Lionel Crawl, dramatic instruction.
Now, look. The lock on the door has been broken.
Open the door.
Right. Look. There's a light on in the inner office.
Come on.
Now,
All right, sister, come out from behind that desk.
Good heavens. It's Bunny.
It's who?
Bunny. The woman who was hiding in my car.
All right, Bunny. What's the rest of your name and what are you doing here?
Durkin. Letters.
What?
My name is Durkin and I'm here to get those letters I wrote you, Mr. Rathbone. I mean that I thought I wrote you.
And what makes you think you'll find your letters here in Kroll's office?
Well, I just read in the early morning papers that it wasn't you that was killed, but Mr. Kroll. So I figured out that Mr. Kroll must have been pretending to be you.
What's that got to do with the letters?
Well, don't you see? I found them here in Mr. Kroll's desk. I must have been writing to him, not you. But I thought it was you. I addressed the letters to Basil Rathbone at a post office box number in New York, and you answered them. I mean, I guess Mr. Kroll answered them in your name. Just like he taught the dramatic course in your name.
Oh, now, just a minute. Let's start at the beginning. What dramatic course?
Why, the most expensive dramatic correspondence course in America. It cost a lot because the mimeographed lessons were sent straight from Basil Rathbone himself.
How interesting.
And if a student had a special question, she could get it answered personally by Basil Rathbone.
Well, you don't say.
For more money. And then I took a special postgraduate course, and that cost even more money.
This Kroll chap seems to have made more money out of Basil Rathbone than I have.
That's how I got to writing kind of personal letters to Basil Rathbone. And now I've just got to get those letters back. If they came out in this murder investigation so my husband knew about them, why, I declare he'd just kill little old me.
What we want to know is, who killed little old Kroll? You know?
Me? Why, Mr. Rathbone, you're just teasing me, aren't you?
Sure. Come on down to headquarters and he'll tease you some more. Meanwhile, I'm booking you as a material witness in the murder of Lionel Kroll.
Go away. I said go away. Oh, blast. Hello.
Mr. Rathbone, this is Bert Randall. I'm sorry to have to call you this early in the morning.
Early? It's the crack of dawn.
Well, not really.
Yes, really. I just heard it crack.
Yes, but Mr. Rathbone, this is important.
What is?
Well, I just came over here to the theater to get some clothes in my dressing room, and I saw a man sneak out of your dressing room. After that shooting episode, I thought I'd better tell you.
You think he's the man who did the shooting?
I don't know. He looked dangerous. I thought you might like to investigate.
I never like to investigate men who look dangerous, but I think I'd better. I'll be right over. It certainly is dark, Bert. Any signs of our prowler?
I don't see him on stage.
Suppose you take a look upstairs in the dressing rooms. I'll search the wings.
Right. Shout if you need me.
Oh, I most certainly will. Hello? Anyone here? Hello?
Hello.
Who are you?
Can't you guess?
I guess you were the gentleman who's been using me for target practice.
You guess right. And I still got my gun. By the way, I never been much good at long range, but I'm mighty good close up. And I'm close up now.
Well, look here. Why are you trying to kill me? I mean, I don't even know who you are.
My name's Sam Durkin.
Durkin? Oh, you're Bunny's husband.
By the time you realize Bunny had a husband, Bunny doesn't know it, but I saw those love letters you wrote her. You trifled with her affections. And where I come from, that's reason enough to kill a man. And that's what I'm going to do. Now.
Now, Mr. Durkin.
Stand still, Rathbone.
But you see, that's what I'm trying to tell you. I'm not Rathbone.
What do you mean?
Well, didn't you hear the radio? Basil Rathbone's dead. He was brutally murdered.
Well, then, who are you?
Me? Oh, I'm his understudy.
You look like Rathbone.
Yes. People have often commented on how much I look like Basil Rathbone. They say the resemblance is uncanny.
But you say Rathbone's dead?
That's right. That's right. He's lying in the funeral parlor right now. Terrible thing. Great loss to the theater.
It's no loss to anyone. He trifled with my wife.
Oh, I can't believe that, Basil. He wasn't that type of chap at all.
And you're his understudy?
That's right.
You're his understudy. Guess I got no call to kill you.
No call at all.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's quite all right, old man. Now, if you'll just excuse me...
I didn't see anyone upstairs, but I... Good heavens, that's the man, Mr. Rathbone.
Oh, you stupid bonehead.
So you are Basil Rathbone.
Yes, he's Basil Rathbone.
Who are you?
I'm Mr. Rathbone's understudy. Who are you?
I'm the man who's going to shoot Mr. Rathbone right now.
Oh, no, you don't. I've got him, Bert. Get his gun.
I've got it. He must be the man who was shooting at you before.
Yes, but I don't think I'm going to give him any more practice. I think I'll turn him over to Farrell right away.
All right, Durkin. Suppose you start answering questions.
Well, I only tried to kill Rathbone here. He trifled with my wife's affections.
For the last time, Durkin, Kroll trifled with your wife's affections.
You really ought to know that, Durkin, considering you killed Kroll.
I didn't kill Kroll.
And I suppose you have an alibi for 120 last night.
120? Well, let's see. What? At 1:20, I was at a bar called the Green Turtle. You can ask the bartender there.
All right, okay, Sergeant. Lock him up and check his story and get back to me.
Right, sir. Come on, you.
This is an outrage.
Sure, it's an outrage, but come on.
But I got an alibi.
Everybody's got an alibi.
What do you mean?
I just let Bunny Durkin go. She proved she was at the movies with another woman last night at 1:20. Mrs. Kroll was with friends at home.
Well, then, who could... Farrell. What about Bert?
Bert Randall, your understudy?
That's right. After all, he was the one who got me down to the theater today, and into Durkin's hands. Might have been just chance, but it might have been planned that way.
No, you can forget Randall, Rathbone. He's got the perfect alibi. He was visiting a friend way across town from the Grace Hotel at about 1:25. According to you, the murder was committed at 1:20 while you listened. Randall couldn't possibly have killed Kroll and gotten across town in 5 minutes.
Well, is the friend absolutely sure of the time Bert showed up at his place?
Absolutely.
How do you know?
I was the friend.
I still don't understand, Farrell. Why was Bert Randall visiting you?
He just happened to drop into headquarters. He wanted to know if I had any news on the guy who shot at you as you left the theater last night. He was worried about you.
Oh. Farrell, this is ridiculous. Someone must have committed the crime at 1:20.
Look, are you sure the crime was committed at 1:20?
I glanced at my watch as I hung up the phone. I suppose I could have misread it, but I doubt it.
So do I.
Wait. Grace Hotel operator would have a record of the call to me at Westchester, and she might have noted the exact time. We could check.
Hey, we sure could. Come on.
Grace Hotel. Yes, madam. One moment, please.
Excuse me, operator.
Yeah?
May we see your long-distance time sheet for last night, please?
Well, I... Hey, you're Basil Rathbone.
Yes, quite.
Settles it. I had a fight with my girlfriend. She said you were dead, and I said it was a mistake. So I'm right, huh?
Yes, you're right.
Boy, am I glad.
Why, thank you.
Sure. Now she owes me a dollar.
Miss, please, may we see the long-distance timesheet for last night?
Well, that woman over there just asked for it, too. I told her I couldn't give it out, but since you're a cop...
Now, look. Over there, it's Mrs. Kroll.
You check the timesheet, Rathbone. I'm going to talk to that lady.
All right.
Good evening, Mrs. Kroll.
Good evening, Lieutenant.
I understand you're interested in the telephone operator's timesheet.
I have a right to investigate the murder.
Oh, don't you like the way the police are doing it?
You think my husband was using Mr. Rathbone's name illegally? He wasn't. He had a legitimate dramatic school business and he was framed.
Farrell,
find out something, Rathbone?
Plenty. According to that timesheet there, there's no record of any call from the hotel to Westchester last night.
But... The lights! They've gone out!
All right, everybody, stay where you are. Stay where you are!
What was that?
What happened?
Somebody screamed.
Put on the lights, somebody! Put on the lights!
There, that's better.
Now, watch that switch, Rathbone, so nobody touches it again.
Right.
All right, now. All right. Nobody leave this lobby till we get to the bottom of this. Rathbone, where's that timesheet?
Somebody took it, fellow, when the lights went out.
All right. Whoever took it, hand it over.
You heard what the lieutenant said, Mrs. Crowe. Hand it over.
I was just going to, Mr. Rathbone. Here, Lieutenant. I took it when the lights went out. It was lying on the desk, and I didn't want anybody to steal it.
That's a likely story. Who screamed?
I did. I felt someone trying to tear the timesheet out of my hand.
Oh, now, look, would somebody please tell me what's so important about this timesheet?
Very good question, Farrell. Why should anyone want to conceal the fact... Oh, good heavens. Of course. Of course.
In the words of Fatima, time is the essence. A fact misplaced in time conceals the truth.
Why didn't I think of that before? Ladies and gentlemen, those words of Fatima that I just recalled will help me solve tonight's mystery. Time is the essence. A fact misplaced in time conceals the truth. Now, can you guess who killed Lionel Crowe? Well, just light up your Fatimas and enjoy yourselves. You like smoking the new long Fatima cigarette. You see, Fatima has all the advantages of a long cigarette. A cleaner, cooler, milder smoke. And in addition, Fatima has a really superb flavor. A different, better flavor. You see, Fatima is a blend of more expensive tobaccos. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you smoke a long cigarette, smoke the best of long cigarettes. Smoke Fatima. It's the long cigarette that's long on quality.
Now, back to Mr. Basil Rathbone for the exciting conclusion of tonight's Tale of Fatima.
Why didn't you think of what before, Rathbone?
Paddle. There was no call made from the Grace Hotel to me at 1:20.
But you got a phone call at 1:20?
Exactly, but it didn't come from here. So it couldn't have come at the actual time of the murder because the murder was committed here.
Well, then what did you hear over the phone?
A reconstruction of the crime, Farrell. An act. By an actor.
You mean Bert Randall?
Exactly. Quite some time after he killed Crowley, phoned me and reenacted the killing, calling from a booth right near headquarters.
But why?
So we could rush right in to see Farrell and establish a perfect alibi. Oh. But of course, to make it stick, he had to destroy the timesheet.
No, no, you can't make that stick, Rathbone. Randall wasn't here just now when the timesheet was swiped.
He must be here. I suggest you look in the only possible hiding place, behind that switchboard.
What? Oh, now, Rathbone, you're nuts.
No, he's not, Lieutenant.
Randall. All right. What's the story?
Well, that's easy, Farrell. He was conducting the dramatic course using my name, not Crowe. He merely copied Crowe's mimeographed lessons.
I told you my husband had an honest business. He had nothing to do with this.
He had one thing to do with it, Mrs. Crowe. He found out Randall was stealing his lessons, so Randall lured him to the hotel here and killed him to keep him quiet.
I get it. And then planted the letters and papers on him so it would seem Crowe was conducting the racket. Well, you going to deny that, Randall?
No, Lieutenant. I'm an actor. I know an exit cue when I hear one. Shall we go?
Mr. Rathbone, I just wanted to remind you the name is still Bunny, in case you might want to look me up sometime.
Look you up?
Uh-huh. How's about hopping the Chattanooga choo-choo?
Well, I'd like to, dear girl, but I've already booked passage on a slow boat to China.
Join us again next week when we'll have another exciting tale of Fatima. Right, Mr. Rathbone?
Yes, indeed. Fatima helps me solve an amazing tale that began when a door opened and reached its climax when a killer closed the door and laughed. Be with me then, won't you? Good night.
Thank you. Tales of Fatima stars Mr. Basil Rathbone with original music by Jack Miller. Lieutenant Farrell is played by Francis DeSales. The entire production is under the direction of Harry Ingram. Michael Fitzmaurice speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Truth is stranger than fiction. This is the proof. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not. A whale harpooned off the coast of Australia in 1886 was landed on the whaler John and Winthrop only after the monster had bitten two whale boats in half. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you the story of a tortured act of faith. To atone for an act of disrespect shown to his teacher, an Indian named Andrana traveled from Madura to the holy town of Badrinath on the Tibetan border, a distance of 1,600 miles in 4 years. Instead of walking, he would fall continuously on the ground, rise and fall again for the entire journey. On the return trip, he neither sat or lay down, but slept, tied to a post, believe it or not.
Entry, the Ketch Scarlet Queen, Philip Kearney, Master. Position 2 degrees 25 minutes north, 128 degrees 13 minutes east. Wind light, sky fair. Remarks, left anchorage Cayu Bay, Halmahera after unscheduled voyage to island of Batanta. Reason for voyage, Grafter's Fort in the Black Pearl of Galela Bay.
Shortly before the Civil War, a daring plan was conceived to speed the mail between East and West. It was the famous Pony Express. On April 3rd, 1860, the first Pony Express riders set out from St. Joseph, Missouri, with a pocket of lightweight mail. Along the express route, other riders and fresh horses waited at relay stations in order that the mail could be carried without a break. 10 1/2 days after the first rider left St. Joseph, a Pony Express rider galloped into Placerville, California. The mail had crossed the country in record time. For a short time, the Pony Express continued its colorful operation as the riders fought against hardship and danger to bring the East and West closer together. But while the service was fast, it was also expensive. Too expensive to be continued. In 1861, the Pony Express was discontinued, but not before it had become a part of the American legend. Today, the Pony Express is remembered at both ends of the route. In St. Joseph, Missouri, is the Pony Express Monument, which recalls the courage of the riders. At the other end of the old route is the Pony Express Museum in Sacramento, which at one time was a relay station of the express. The Pony Express Monument and Museum remind us of the rich heritage that as Americans we share and stand ready to defend.
It was the 10th morning after we left the island of Bali that we pushed into Malacca Passage and swung close to the 100-mile chain of islands that fringes the west coast of Halmahera. By noon, we'd trimmed our sail and started the channel run past Morotai. It was then that my chief mate, Gallagher, noted the receipt of a radio message in the log of the Scarlet Queen and came to the wheel to report it to me.
It's an NC, Skipper. The schooner Regina aground in Galela Bay. Captain and mate ashore.
But the message told only a part of the story. We found the Regina, all right, 50 yards offshore. Her stern awash to the main house, her back broken on a reach. It wasn't until we'd coasted by her on the landward side that we saw the rest. There was a man aboard. He was native and he was dead. He'd been hanged from the foremast.
and his body revolved and swung slowly from side to side as the current and the reef fought continually for possession of the battered hull. And so Mutual continues The Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, written by Gil Dowd and Bob Tallman, and starring Elliot Lewis. The Scarlet Queen, proudest ship to plow the seas, bound for uncharted adventure. Every week a complete entry in the log, and every week a league further in the strange Voyage of the Scarlet Queen. It didn't take me long to decide that I didn't want any part of this particular salvage and rescue job. I pushed the throttle open and swung the wheel to port to make the shortest turn possible back toward the open sea. The circle took us in toward shore, and at the closest point, the rest of the situation broke.
By those dirties, what's going on?
Keep down, Red.
50 caliber. I'd recognize that voice anywhere. It'll make a sieve out of the Queen before we could get her out of range.
Kill the motor, Red.
Okay.
All right. We'll drift in.
Drop your hook! We'll send you to the bottom!
What's the idea?
I said drop your hook!
I said what's the idea?
Was that close enough?
Gallagher.
Yeah?
Let go of the bower anchor.
Okay.
A hand here, Crowder. You're a good head, Captain. Start putting your small boat over the side. You and your chief mate, come ashore.
I hope I ain't putting you in any trouble. I get moving up the trail, Captain. I don't waste no words. I want passage out of here. I want to go to Batata. My mate, a native girl, and me. It's about south-southeast of this island.
That's not where we're going.
All right, Captain, it's where I'm going. With you or without you.
The shack we were approaching was typically native, set in a clearing in the Nipa Palms. 100 yards behind it was the fringe of the fairly large village of Galela, with the inevitable tin-roofed frame building belonging to the single Chinese trader. As we swung around the corner of the shack, I saw 2 more machine guns set up to cover the village. In front of their muzzles at the edge of the clearing, there were 4 or 5 dark-skinned bodies sprawled in the sun where they'd fallen. 2 people waited for us in the shack.
All right, get inside and sit down.
1 I took to be the mate, swarthy, slightly built, with a faint smile twisting his thin lips. The other was the ugliest native girl I've ever seen. Flattened nose, a squat, sagging figure, the earlobes hanging almost to her shoulders from the weight of the G-jaws shoved into the gaping perforations. I couldn't figure why anyone would want to take her anyplace.
If one would carry Banner on 1 ship.
Shut up, you sniveling cow. Get over there and sit down. Never mind, Louise. Now, let's talk it over, Captain. The beggars are after my pearls. They were diving for me. We had fair luck, and now they want them for themselves to take over to Caillou Bay to trade to that Chinaman in the village. They wrecked my ship and...
And they would starve us out in time if we stay here and let them. Which we don't think is a very good idea, huh, Grafter?
You got any more to say, Grafter?
I said enough, didn't I?
You've been pumping nothing but lies, Grafter. These Halma Herons have been diving for quite a few generations. They don't have to rush machine guns for a handful of pearls. You don't have to hang them from a mast to keep them in line.
What do you think of this fellow, Grafter?
Let him blow.
That's all I have to say. Come on, Red, we're leaving.
Okay, Skipper.
Right, don't try it.
Let them come, Grafter!
We had to try it because there's no place to phone for help on Halmahera. The chair I threw at Grafter sent him off balance, but it stopped things for only a second. Red got his hands on Louis too late. The automatic flashed twice and Gallagher's knees buckled. He crumpled to the floor, his hands clutching at Louis and finally dragging him down too. I forgot Grafter. I forgot everything but the red stain that was spreading from the side of Gallagher's head running down his neck. Already soaking his jumper, I headed for Louis. I landed on him. I was reaching for his throat when... My head exploded under Grafter's gun muzzle and I went out of the fight. I don't know for how long, but when I came back, Red was still alive.
shock, he'd gotten to his feet. He was half blinded by blood, but he was still fighting. He'd lifted Louise by his belt, and he was swinging his body at Drasher like a club, with nothing but heart keeping him moving. I got to my feet and started across the room to help him, but I couldn't get there. I grabbed the wall to keep me up. And the last thing I saw before I went out again was the squat, splay-footed native girl, Bonna. She found a piece of broken furniture. She held it like a club, and she was moving in for the kill. And then the picture swam in my eyes, turned gray, and then blacked out.
When I could see, or knew that I was seeing again, I was still on my feet and walking. I didn't know where I was or how I'd gotten there, but I was out of the shack, out of sight of the village. Then I remembered the final picture of Red. They didn't have a reason in the world to stop short of killing him. Suddenly, everything went out of me. It was kind of a relief to pass out.
I believe you slept any long time. You come awake now.
Red.
Me no Red. Me sing she. For a long time, Trader Galela.
Oh, yeah.
I think a man belong along machine gun hit your head too hard.
A grafter. No, not hard enough. Who'd you say you were?
Me sing she, Trader. You own house belong to me. A Galela village boy is my friend. But they bring you along this place.
Yeah, why?
Oh, it's hard. I tell them. I want to help you. You like need help?
I don't know what I need. What you and Galela boys want?
Oh, I want your fast passage to a place of ancestor for those who belong a machine gun.
You want to get rid of Grafter and Louise, too, huh?
Hey, you help. Galela boys help. Very soon, all are dead long time.
What did they do to Galela boys?
How they say, long you?
Well, they tell me they find plenty pearls, that Galela boys want to take pearls back.
Oh, that true. Catch many pearl. Many pearl.
You talk straight, Singh. Maybe we all help.
You listen.
All right.
Long time, very big shark spirit. He said this. When Galela boy catch a big black pearl, keep pearl. Many wives come to village, you savvy?
Savvy, and they found the black pearl.
Oh, one black pearl.
And Grafter and Louise could keep all the rest, but they still wouldn't give it up. Must be a wonderful pearl, Singh.
Bring much money, plenty wives. You help poor Galela boys. They catch your wives. You catch your men belong along machine gun.
Sounds like a fair trade. Singh, do you have any guns here?
No guns.
You have dynamite?
Not dynamite.
You savvy dynamite?
Oh, savvy. Sure. Oh, catch your men a fish along dynamite. Yeah.
You know one boy, he's strong swimmer. He swim to my ship.
Oh, I know men a strong swimmer.
One boy. You tell him go long way up beach. You tell him swim long way out. Come my ship from reef. You savvy?
Savvy. They no see from beach.
Good. You go bring him here. He take note from me to ship. He bring back box with dynamite and gun. Go on now. Chop, chop.
Very good. Oh, very soon. Joyous boom. All other fly away to ancestor.
It took a little better than an hour and a half for Singh's boy to get to the ship and back. Another 45 minutes to cap and fuse the dynamite. All right, listen, Singh. You take dynamite to beach near machine guns. Not close, you savvy? You stay in shadows.
Oh, like a tiger.
Yeah, like a tiger. Then as soon as you get there, you light all dynamite and throw it.
Like a soldier.
Not at the machine guns, Singh. Some on the beach, some in the water. Those at machine gun will fire at noise, savvy?
Oh, what the matter? Throw to machine gun?
Because they may be hide black pearl. You kill them, they can't tell you where. Savvy?
Savvy. Oh, you very strong man. Very smart, like a thing. I throw to beach, to water.
Then you come back here. Wait for me.
Oh, where you go?
I go to their house. Grafter is there. When he hears dynamite and maybe machine gun, he runs out of house. And I catch him like this.
Very nice, you strong man. You have a minute friend in the village tomorrow. I go now.
After he left, I pocketed my .45 and skirting the edge of the silent, darkened village, I headed for the shack in the clearing. The gun was still in my hand when I heard the faintest rustle of almost silent feet behind me. The safety catch snapped off as I whirled, and I was ready for a hip shot. But I didn't use it.
Please, don't cut down. You're savvy along with me.
Sing, what the devil are you doing here? Why aren't you on the beach with the dynamite?
Oh, gotcha. Two Kalera boys. They like to shoot dynamite.
Sing, if you mess this up, I'll... Look, you stay this place.
Uh-huh.
Right here. I go to shack. You don't come along with me.
Oh, sabe. I stay this place. In shadow, like hiding tiger.
I didn't risk a look through the window when I got to the shack to see what was in store for me. I inched to a position about 3 feet from the doorway and waited. It wasn't for long. Then the first charge blew. And the answering burst of machine gun fire blasting at flashes and shadows told me that the reactions on the beach were normal. Almost simultaneously, I heard feet hit the floor inside to start for the door. I moved into position just as he stopped in the doorway. It wasn't Grafter. It was even more to the point, it was Luis. And I smashed my right hand, automatic and all, into the middle of his sneering face. Everything I felt, grief, hate, a continually beating desire to avenge Red, went into the blow.
Get up, Luis.
What are you doing here?
Get on your feet! I got some talking to do first. So help me, what I'll do to you after that, I don't know.
I got no talk with you.
Don't, Luis. Help me keep my hands off of you. Be careful what you say. What did you say? Now sit down.
What do you want?
I want the black pearl.
Oh, what the devil? What black pearl?
What right? How about it? The black pearl from Galela Bay.
You're off your head. We didn't get any black pearl here. We didn't even work the beds. We ran in here from some weather, and the Malays attacked.
Why do you keep asking for it, Luis?
Why do you think that I lie with a 45 in my face? I'm telling you the truth. You want to see our pearl, the pearl from a year and a half of working with the Moluccas? I show you in the table there.
Sure, Luis. Go get your pearls.
We got the sack off the ship. I show you what we sweat for.
It was almost as though he told me what he was going to do. And I let him. He opened the drawer. And I knew from the way his hand spread, forefinger stretched for a trigger guard, that I was right. I let him pick it up. And when I saw the glint of metal, I fired. His right arm jerked between elbow and shoulder and swung back loosely. His fingers relaxed and the gun dropped back into the drawer.
You got a left arm, Luis. You want to try it again? Don't you know I want you to, Luis? I saw you kill my chief mate. Don't you know I want you to try something so I can kill you?
You're crazy.
Maybe you're right, Luis.
I didn't kill your chief mate.
No? Maybe I was dreaming, huh, Luis?
If somebody killed him, it wasn't me.
Oh, you dirty little... Listen, Luis, the pearl. Tell me where the black pearl is.
I don't know what you mean. We don't have any black pearl. It is the truth.
You machine-gunned the Malays that came after it. They wrecked your ship to get it, remember? The men in the village want it, Luis. They want the wives it'll bring.
Wait, Captain.
What is it, Sing? I can't turn around.
I am watch for a long window. But yes, big danger belong this house.
I think I know...
What do you mean, Sing?
Please, make a step away from straight line belong window.
All right, I savvy.
Big danger come from big spirit.
10 seconds later, I learned why Sing had moved me. A heavy hunting spear streaked in through the window. Luis collapsed under the impact. I didn't have to check pulse to know that the spearman, whoever he was, had cheated me out of the final payoff for Gallagher.
Oh, that happened, Mr. Copter. I catch a danger away from you.
Yeah, thanks, Singh. But you'll never learn about Black Pearl from this fella.
He fly very fast, ancestor. Too bad.
You come along me, we maybe catch Grafter, huh?
Oh, no, all the same with this one.
What? You mean dead?
Fly on happy wing. Oh, very dead.
How?
Galela boys put two dynamite very close alongside the machine gun.
You killed him?
Ah.
You plenty fool. Now who tell you where to find pearl?
Oh, Galela boys don't want your pearl no more.
No want you?
Galela boys don't want you one thing. A poor girl belong to Galela village. Poor Bana. You bring her, huh?
Me bring her? Where is she?
Oh, she along your ship.
On my ship? Who took her out there?
Oh, no fella take her. She take a fella. He hurt.
She took someone? Sing, this fella, his name Gallagher?
No. Not Gallagher. You think a name belong to me.
What do you mean, Sing? No savvy.
You talk a name same time you come awake.
What?
Him name, Red.
red.
Yeah, red. Are you sure? You no make mistake.
Oh, no mistake. Bana, she big friend, long red. You bring her village, belong her. You big friend for Bana.
Sing, I don't have time to explain this in case you don't understand it, but I promise if Bana wants to go to the royal wedding in London, I'll take her there. Red!
Yeah.
Where are you, Red?
In my cabin, Skipper.
Well, hey, you look great, Red.
Yeah.
What's that mess on your head?
Never mind. That's Banner's private mixture of fish scale, seaweed, and mud. If you try to take it off, I'll have a slit your throat. Besides, I got a gouge across my temple a half inch deep and 6 inches long.
The great one will rest his tongue.
The great one?
Yeah. She liked the way I swung Louise around my head.
Oh, Red, if you knew what I've been through, I thought you were dead.
I almost was. Then Banner walked in and clubbed those two with a chair or something. I passed out. She hid me till dark and brought me out here in a canoe.
I promised her a trip to London if she wants it, but I suppose she'd rather have her Galela village. Banner, you want to go ashore now?
Ashore? Skipper, are you nuts?
The great one will rest his roar.
Ashore.
Well, what's the matter? Sing, she said her village was waiting for her with open arms.
Well, I suppose he's right, but not Galela. Her village is on Batanda, the joint where Grafter wanted to go. They were going to deliver her to her husband for a big hunk of ransom.
Ransom? To get Bana back?
Yeah.
Red, let me tell you now, before this starts to make the kind of sense I think it's going to, I've been knocking my brains out trying to locate a black pearl that held a lot of magic until we killed everybody in Grafter's outfit so they couldn't tell me there wasn't any pearl.
Oh, yes, there is.
What?
Yeah. Tell him, Bana. Who is the pearl?
One is the wife of the Sultan of Batanta.
You...
One was taken by force from one's place. By those the great one be together as saplings. One's noble husband pledged gold, pearls, and bright stones to equal the weight of oneself for one safe return.
That's quite a pile.
Yeah, then your buddy Sing Shi horned in on the deal. He got the Malays to wreck Grafter's ship and made his own deal with her old man.
20 wives for Galela boys. How many?
Only 200, and they must be budding.
And he led me around by the nose and called himself a simple traitor.
If those in whose care I rest would decide upon their demand upon one's husband, one is anxious to journey at once to one's home and husband.
Mm. Poor Banner. She don't care who gets the ransom. She just wants to go home.
We wasted 3 days getting Banner to Batanta, convincing her husband that there was no debt between us, and getting back to Cayu Bay, where one of Kang's luggers was waiting impatiently with our sailing orders. By 1 that afternoon, we'd weighed anchor, picked our way through the reefs under power, and nosed into the wind-brushed waters of Malacca Passage
head
once more.
To make sail!
The crewmen, relieved as always to get their faces pointed toward wide, deep water, jumped to their stations with
a
will.
Stop it, chief!
The big main boom, its sail filling suddenly with a heavy gust, swung recklessly to starboard, sending the men at the rail tumbling into prone positions to escape its sweep. Snapped out, and the pull of the sail sent a shudder through the ship.
Smartly now!
The jibs ran up. Then the mizzen. The deck canted beneath me. Our spot in the world took on the atmosphere of speed that comes only from leaning sails, rushing water at the rail, and taut rigging, making a song with the wind.
I'm not giving you much of a hand today, Skipper.
Ah, forget it, Red. With a head in the shape that yours is in, you'd probably foul us up anyway.
All right. Take my watches, then. I've earned a rest.
No argument there, Red. But she took good care of you, though. And you can't always have a beautiful nurse.
Oh, no. You and I are thinking of different kinds of beauty, Skipper. The picture of her when she waded into Grafter and Louis. Oh, that was real beauty.
And the picture of that hair, that figure, those earlobes when we met her.
Yeah.
Ah, that's real nightmare. But I love her.
All right, if you want to cut in. Drink, Skipper?
From this distance and with no gang fights in sight, I'm safe on all sides. You're cut in on. After you, mate. After you.
Log entry, the catch Scarlet Queen, 5:30 p.m. Miles traveled from San Francisco, 20,221. Wind fresh, sky fair. Carrying full sail. Ship secure for night. Signed, Philip Kearney, Master.
In the exciting history of America's development into the foremost industrial nation in the world, the McCormick Reaper stands out as a monumental invention. Back in the 1830s, the flat, fertile prairie lands of the Middle West were ideal for growing grain. The all-important crop of wheat was easy to sow and to grow, but harvesting the grain was a different matter. A laborer swinging a large hand scythe moved slowly down the fields. Even a strong man could cut no more than an acre of grain a day. Farmers had to help each other to harvest crops, but unfortunately, all crops ripened at about the same time and had to be harvested in 10 days. So it became a practice for farmers to plant only as much grain as the men in each family could reap in that short time. Then came the mechanical reaper, perfected by Cyrus McCormick. His first reaper, made in 1831, was a dismal failure. The noise terrified the horses which pulled the machine. It didn't cut evenly, and it damaged some of the grain. But McCormick was not one to give up easily. He kept working on his invention and secured his first patent in 1834. There was still no demand for his machine, however, so he kept working on it. By 1841, he had a horse-drawn machine resembling a chariot with a cutting arm extending several feet out at one side. As the reaper moved forward, steel fingers separated the grain into bunches of stalks that were cut by a sawtooth action resembling today's barber clippers. A large reel revolved around the cutting arm, each blade bending a section of wheat down and pressing it into the cutting action. McCormick sold two of these machines and opened a factory in Chicago. In the next 2 years, he built and sold 80 reapers. By 1851, he was selling 1,000 machines a year. By 1857, 23,000. McCormick's reaper caught on and was making farming in the prairie land productive and profitable. Over the great expanses of the West, our agricultural frontier was rolling toward the Rockies at the rate of 30 miles per year. Yes, at one time, the harvesting of vast fields of grain offered a problem of manpower. But it was solved by the mechanical reaper of Cyrus McCormick, who had the spirit typical of all American inventors. Somehow there must be a way. Let's find it.
Of the Scarlet Queen stars Elliot Lewis as Phil Kearney with Ed Max as Gallagher, and tonight featured Jack Crucian as Singh, with Rolf Sedan as Luis and Virginia Gregg as Banna. Music scored and conducted by Richard Arant. The Scarlet Queen, produced by James Burton, is written by Gil Dowd and Bob Tallman.
Going to do it for this episode of the Relic Radio Show. But if you want to find past episodes of this show and more old time radio, just visit relicradio.com. You'll find everything linked to right on the front page. All the other podcasts, links to our social media stuff, forum, shoutcast stream with even more old time radio, and our donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Everything Relic Radio is listener supported. Couldn't do it without you. Thank you very much to those who have donated, and thank you for joining me today. Talk to you again next Tuesday with another hour of old-time radio on the Relic Radio Show.